Hi guys, so welcome back to British. I'm Afra Gluck.
I'm Jeevan Kennedy.
And today we are going to be talking about what has been taking the media, the news, every single thing has been, other than coronavirus. It is a break from the faff of coronavirus, but it is a serious matter. And that is Black Lives Matter. And Jeevan, if you'd like to elaborate on why this has all come up again.
Yeah, so the incident at hand is George Floyd was killed by police on the 25th of May in Minnesota, in the USA, after being detained for alleged forgery. And his death has sparked global outrage because he was killed very unnecessarily. He was, as I say, was suspected of forgery, and a police officer decided it was acceptable or necessary to kneel on his neck until he died. And this has sparked a worldwide discussion, but has sparked outrage amongst the Black Lives Matter community and those who are trying to speak out against police brutality. We've seen protests starting in Minneapolis, which is where he was from.
Yeah, it's gone to all 50 states now.
But it's also going worldwide. We've seen Paris has gone insane. We've seen protests in London, in Dublin, in Berlin.
In Copenhagen, I've seen people in Ghana even protesting, Nigeria. It is global.
It has sparked a real global outrage. And in some cases, specifically in America, the protests, which were initially meant to be peaceful, have kind of escalated into incidents of violence and rioting and incidents between police and civilians. So lots of people are sharing videos online and stuff. Some say that this is all because the Black Lives Matter movement and Antifa are going too far. Some people are saying that it's the police who were inciting all this violence. So what we're here to talk today about is the main issues, which are the implications of the protests, the nature of racism in the 21st century, and probably most importantly, what we can do to help. So Afra, what's your hot take on all the violence that has occurred?
I am pro-rioting. I believe that, so the thing is, you can keep saying something, but until you actually cause fuss, because rioting will bring attention to it from the media and just public outrage. You know, if these things are happening in your city, you're going to know about it and you're going to have more of an understanding. And secondly, it's causing disruption to the system that is allowing Black men, women and children to be killed in the streets by police officers. You're disrupting the cycle, and you're saying this: we are not going to move forward in a mild-mannered way until action is taken. And I am completely for rioting. I think that you've, because protesting and rioting, I feel like rioting is the extreme. And when I say rioting, I mean going out there, chanting, screaming, kicking off a fuss, making it known that your stance is this and that what's happening is wrong. Because I think if you are so quick to tear gas a whole crowd of people, if you're so quick to shoot, throw a bullet at teenagers and tackle people to the floor instead of arresting three police officers that killed a man, then you deserve all the kicking up and fussing you can get. I'm sorry, like, it just infuriates me. It's been for so, I did this when I was in year nine, I did this my English speaking listening. It is infuriating. For so many years, Black people have been killed in the streets, brown people have been killed in the streets. It's ridiculous. Like, when can you not just get off our neck, you know? It's just the continuous cycle of abuse, of targeting us. And it's not even like it's an issue in the UK, because in Kent alone, as a Black person, you're 22 times more likely to be pulled over by the police for anything, to be stopped and searched, whatever. So it is us as Black people being targeted because the colour of our skin is seen as a weapon. We are seen as dangerous in our nature, which is rightfully so. You know, this is the justification for our arrests, for our abuse at the hands of the people that's meant to protect us. It really just grinds my gears, like, ugh.
Yeah, well, I was having a discussion with this, about this with a friend, like, yesterday, and we were kind of discussing whether or not the violence that has come from this is actually justified. And he was kind of the opinion that, like, it's not the way forward, that we should be peaceful, and the way forward is negotiations. But when you stop and look throughout history, progress comes from violence. It comes from rioting. Those in power who benefit off the system that oppresses other types of people will not give that privilege up easily. The suffragettes knew that when they fought for women's rights in the UK. People at Stonewall knew that. Black people have known that in America for so many years. Like, we studying the history of civil rights in A-level history. Like, we've got the Rodney King riots in 1992, but it goes back to Newark in 1967 or Tulsa,
and then you remember
in 1921.
The work that the National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People were doing, they were trying to go through Congress, but because they had these very powerful white men who were there to stop it, it couldn't go any further. There was so many times the bills were shot down, even when black members of Congress or white members of Congress brought them up, it didn't matter, they were being shot down. And it's only when, unfortunate, radical change happens, is when people start to listen, when people start to pay attention, like the summer of 64, with the, is that with the peaceful bus protest? When they were doing the freedom ride arches and the walks, only then when we all got out in numbers and we all showed, we all made a difference. Because if you're getting out in numbers, you're leaving your workplace, you're taking a pause in your day, in your natural, how you normally live your life, to show your support to a movement. So I think that that is the only way, unfortunately, that people are going to listen to us and pay attention.
Well, I think when people are more concerned about what's come out of this, when you feel more emotion towards the rioting and the looting than a long history of black people being unfairly treated and targeted by the police, you kind of wonder, is there a displacement in priorities?
Yeah.
Which side are you meant to be on? Like, I think it's very easy for certain people to sit back and say, oh, rioting's wrong, we should be peaceful, when, like, me as an individual, I owe so much of my freedom and my very existence to violence. Exactly. I owe it to people who fought for women's rights, for LGBT rights. My members of my own family fought against British rule in Ireland and India. How could I possibly condemn that? It's a really difficult situation to be in.
Exactly. Like, my family on my mum's side, for generations ago, they left Nova Scotia to go back to Sierra Leone, go back to Africa to start a life there. They left the slavery, they left slavery, they were freed, and they got to go there. And that freedom didn't just come from sitting around and writing on bits of paper, because they were not seen as individuals. They were dehumanized to the extent they were seen as animals. And I think that's what people need to understand. They're like, oh, but, you know, black people are, like, they're the perpetrators of more crime. If you look in the system in America, you know, more black people are in prison than any other ethnic, any other ethnic group. But it's because we've been targeted. And it is, as well, we're more affected by the socioeconomic sides of slavery and of colonialism. So, for example, in America, black people are usually poorer, and with poverty comes substance abuse, comes domestic abuse, comes violence, comes crime. And that will happen to you no matter where you go to, whether it's in Ireland, whether it's in England, whether it's in France, whether it's in Spain. The people at the lower end of the scale are more likely to turn to crime. And because a lot of the black people, because of the systems that they were through in the even in the 1900s, 19th century, 20th century, because of the systems, they went through, they are still, which means they have to turn to selling drugs and things like that. And they're selling drugs for white people to have. Now, I know I sounded really aggressive when I said that, but this gets under my skin, where people, especially in this country, will take advantage of recreational drugs, whether it is cannabis or it could be things even worse like cocaine, ketamine. You know, they, as white people, are using it, getting away with it, having a nice time, la-da-da-da-da, having a fun time. But in London, the gangs, people are being stabbed in the streets over the sale of these drugs. People are being arrested over the sales of these drugs. But it will not ever come back to the people sitting in their middle-class four-bedroom homes who are taking these drugs. It will never come back to them. It will always come back to the people living in the blocks, living in Tottenham, living in all types of places in London, where policemen are busting in their doors. It really infuriates me.
I think the true injustice of this is that people are put in a position where they feel that they have no other choice, that they're put in this position of desperation and they have to turn to violent acts to make their voices heard, because governments will simply not listen until you put the necessary pressure on them of the rioting, of the violence.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a bit of a different side to it that I think we need to address, in that a lot of the violence, some are saying, is being instigated by supremacists and police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me and Jeevan love Twitter. We love Twitter, and we have a very dear friend to us who loves Reddit. So we will see all the threads of like these people, and it's so easy nowadays for you to take a photo and find out where this person comes from, who they are, what's their job, yada yada. So there are photos of people going around smashing up buildings, but then they turn out to be police officers, or of white women putting sledgehammers and, you know, destroying pavement. And a good point actually yesterday that we were talking about was like spray paint. Spray paint is not easy to come about. So if you have spray paint in your house, you're probably not going to be using it for artistic means, you know? And you are then taking that chance to go out and put in all types of writing on walls. But it's so easy for us to be, you know, the media, to look at one thing and then be like, oh, but look, there's a fire over there. Ignore those people standing peacefully. There's a fire over there. Someone just smashed up that window in a shop. Like, it's so easy, because that is stuff that's interesting. That is what sells in newspapers and magazines. But I'm not surprised, because it is literally, if you wanted to start a race riot, if you are a Republican and you want Donald Trump to come in there and batter everyone and then be like, I am the man, I'm the macho man of America, look what I did. If you ensue violence, that makes it even more just for Donald Trump to then come in and kick off. Then he's going to be seen as a hero, and they're going to get re-elected. Like, you're making us, as I say, more liberal people, seem like we're going around smashing up the place just for the sake of it. And I think it's a political thing. People are being very clever, and they know that there is an election this November, and they are being 100%. Very strategic.
There's something very dodgy about the way even policemen are targeting reporters and journalists who are attending the riots and reporting on it. Like, there's instance on live TV where reporters are being sprayed with tear gas and having rubber bullets fired at them. Like, I feel there's definitely, I don't want to seem like a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, yes.
Like tinfoil hat. But there's definitely something dodgy going on, like, to force that agenda. Look at these rowdy people who are trying to protest something that isn't an issue. Oh, they're violent. Donald Trump's the one who's sorting it out. Donald Trump's the one who's going to save you from this, when he's the one instigating it.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure even in this country, like, liberal people would see, like, buildings getting smashed up, like, police officers being harmed from the riots and things like that, and think, oh, well, if Donald Trump says they're bad people and that he's going to go in with the National Guard and even the army, which is not legal, he's going to go and do that. I think that's just, like, I would actually give him a chance. Like, if he's going to work to protect people, and it's just, like, trickling in that narrative of we, the people out of the streets, are wrongdoing, we are being violent and aggressive, and then it would just make you want to go for someone who is not going to be supporting that, and that is Donald Trump, and that is the Republican Party, because they are very much wrong.
Yeah, just look at what happened in Washington, I think the other day, and there was a peaceful protest between the White House and a church, and I don't know if it was the army or the National Guard, but the authorities sprayed tear gas at the crowd and pushed them back and moved them out the way so that Donald Trump could stroll from the White House and take a photo outside of the church with a Bible. But apparently the priest from that church was one of the people in the crowds. Like, if you're still, I don't know how many Americans watch this, but if you're still voting for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Like, I saw this video, and it was people saying, like, Donald Trump loves to go on about the Second Amendment so much, about us having guns, but he's forgetting about the First Amendment and how America was built off revolution and protest. Why can we not come out in the streets and protest now? So I think it's very hypocritical. You know, on one hand, you're so strong about gun rights and all these other things that Americans are guaranteed, but then as soon as people come out and show their disdain for something, they're seen as criminals, and they're seen as violent and aggressive people.
Well, I saw someone on Twitter who brought up one of Donald Trump's old tweets. Well, I say old, and I think it was about the protests in Iran, and he was saying, like, hey, you know how he tweets with, like, the capital letters and the exclamation marks? He's like, Iranian government, don't harm your people. They are wonderful people. They are protesting. But that is happening in your country, and you don't care.
Yeah. It is ridiculous. There's so many, like, hypocritical tweets he has. Like, before he was a politician, and when he was just a businessman. Mm. Like, there's so many things that he tweeted that is now, like, really contradictory to what he spouts at the moment. And it's just...
It's just his nature. He's just the slimy old businessman.
Yeah. And also, another point is that people are so quick to demonise the people out in the streets protesting, but yet you're so quick to support us bombing the Middle East to smithereens. Mm. To smithereens. You're so quickly to call in the SSS5 church child killer bomb over small villages in Syria. But as soon as people get out on the streets protesting, I don't understand how, because like with the terrorists, you know, if there's a village of people, you might think one terrorist is going to be here, but you've got to bomb the whole village. You're going to kill more people than this one alleged terrorist. But then us, we literally saw with our eyes this man get killed, but you're still trying to question why we should go out on the streets and protest.
Mm.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I think to just summarise our whole kind of point, I think violence is... We can acknowledge why it's happening, and we can acknowledge why it will continue to happen unless the government makes a definitive step towards racial equality. But I think the worst thing about it is that we have to be in a position where violence is necessary.
Yeah.
So now we're going to kind of move on to talk about the nature of racism in the 21st century. So we did a podcast a couple of weeks ago about colonialism and the effect of the British Empire, and I was a bit worried because I didn't want to feel like we were repeating ourselves in this episode, but I think people still need to understand
white
privilege
on
and racism in the 21st century.
I don't know if you saw that tweet, but it was of a man. He was saying, like, I did exactly what George Floyd was accused of doing. And it's a funny story that I tell, like, at a party. How, like,
it was
Dara Brynn,
wasn't it?
Yes. And, he said, like, it's a funny story that I tell at parties, yada, yada. Like, I was able, like, the whole thing was fine in the end, but another man lost his life for it. That is my white privilege. And just understanding that, how two of the same situations can end in two completely different routes just because of the colour of your skin is white privilege. I don't understand what's too difficult to get your head around it with white privilege, but I understand people really struggle with it.
Yeah.
But it's just like the colour of my skin, the colour of my brother's skin, the colour of my mum's skin is seen as a colour of violence, something that was dehumanised, I think was made to seem animalistic for so long. And it's just ingrained into people's heads. So unfortunately, the first thing they may see will be, oh, across the road, don't want it. So that boy's got a hoodie on. He's a black boy with a hoodie on. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, in where I live, so I'm putting the group chat, like, there's a young black man walking around with a hoodie up. My mum commented underneath it, says, my son, he's gone to the shops to get some milk for me. Because it's ridiculous. Like, what's the issue? I see white people all the time walking around with their pants sagging, hoodies up, you know, and there is no issue in that. But as soon as a black boy has done it, it's like, oh, it's just a bit suspicious. Don't know about that. And it's just a very stereotypical thing of, like, cross the road, be safe. Yeah. Da, da, da. Like, it's not something to be scared of. No one's going to punch you in the face.
Yeah. So, well, that is the nature of racism in the 21st century. I feel like direct racism, like actively calling people slurs and, you know, taking an active role in racism is kind of not as prevalent anymore. I think what is really the big thing at the moment is like very subtle ingrained racism, things that have been passed down through families, and people just have these notions of what a black person is like, what a brown person is like. Like, my mum growing up in the 70s said that a lot of the time she felt that people, or not, she felt people would say that she was dirty because of the colour of her skin. People, like other white children, didn't like how she looked because it was different from them. But those same people have held those prejudices throughout their lives. You can't really acknowledge your privilege if you are in a position where you are surrounded by one type of person. Like, I have learned so much about black culture, about the black community, by hanging out with and going to school with lots of black people who are absolutely amazing, and I've learned so much about, like, all different kinds of cultures because of the people I surround myself with. And I feel that I've taught people about my cultures by sharing my experiences and my stories.
And it's about diversity. Like, you will not have these prejudiced views if you are seeing these types of people. Like, people say, like, why are you still going on about having a black person in this TV show? It's not even like that big a deal. Like, why are you all getting fussed about the Little Mermaid being black? But it's because if you see it, you get used to it and you're not scared of it. If I am always growing up around people that don't look like me, that talk in a different way to me, I'm not going to think any negative things about them, because I know, oh, I went to school with Vicky. Her mum was from Vietnam and her dad was English, you know. She's fine. She's lovely. She isn't whatever types of stereotypes there may be, you know. If you surround yourself with these people, then you're familiar with them. If on the TV you see a black woman presenting the news, you know that it's like, it's going to be fine. If we have a black prime minister, we know that as a black person we can reach these levels. We are not what generations of people have described us to be. It is just seeing it and being used to it, and that is what's needed. Like, you know, because people often question the need for diversity in television and in media, but we still need to see Asian people. We still need to see people that are from all types of walks of life. So we know that whatever nonsense people are spouting isn't true, because the woman that presents BBC One in the morning, she looks like me, or she looks like you, you know?
Yeah.
We just need more of different people. We need to have more diversity.
Maybe it's about being comfortable with having people of different cultures around, because they did say for the Brexit referendum, obviously a big thing was immigration, and they say people who come from areas with the fewest immigrants are more wary of immigrants than people who
live
with in areas with more immigrants. Exactly. It's like, if you like, representation really does matter, and not just in media and film and TV, but in real life. You need, like, there needs to be different types of people in schools. There needs to be different types of people in the workplace. Diversity is just so, I feel it's so important, just to kind of take away the, like, the mystery behind it, if you know what I mean. Like,
And it's like, I saw a statistic and it said that Kent Police is 97% white. And, like, it's just, it's like, knowing that there is a history of abuse in terms of the police, even in this country, you're not going to feel comfortable. Like, you're going to feel on edge, you're going to feel nervous when, obviously, if you're being arrested, you're being arrested. But still, we need to have a diversity. I want to be taught. I was never taught by someone that looked like me till I think I must have been in like year eight. But I'd never had a teacher that looked like me, or that came from a place like me. And it's just growing up with diversity and seeing these people in these different roles and knowing that if I want, I can be like this. I can be like this person because I've seen someone else do it.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's just simple. Like, it's not difficult to get your heads around. You need to see representation in all walks of life.
Yeah. And don't mean to kind of drag us back, but talking about the indirect nature of racism in the 21st century, I think a big issue that we have with race at the moment is that people are really reluctant to acknowledge that racism even exists. I don't really understand it, but I feel like maybe that's something that should be taught in schools more. Maybe the history of like Britain's colonial past should be taught more, because that has formed the basis of our system and the society that we live in, and we still feel the negative effects of that today.
And why do we, the oppressed, have to know so much and have to educate the people that did the oppressing? Like, why do I, as a person who isn't white, have to educate white people on these different things and explain to them? Like, why can't, it's sad because like these experiences happened to me and happened to my family, but I've got to retell the stories to educate other people. Why can't it be taught in mainstream education so that people know these things? And it is just like a general practice.
Yeah,
you can have conversations about racism in school and things like that, but you're not talking about, you know, the indirect racism, systematic racism, and just things that we experience in every day. Because I've been called racial slurs less times than someone has been indirectly racist to me or prejudiced to me.
Yeah.
But we're not taught about that sort of prejudice in schools.
But I think, like, we've been having that conversation, we had that conversation kind of yesterday with our friend about the discussion on race. Why is it always that we expect people of colour to know everything and white people can get away with knowing next to nothing about the history of their race and their countries and stuff? But I think a big thing that we have been talking about this week with the Blackout Tuesday movement trend, there is a little bit of a worry that people, like, as a white person, your silence on an issue like racism is taking the side of the oppressor. Like, it's no longer enough to be anti-race, to be not racist. You need to be actively racist, which is something that I've seen spread across the internet quite a lot. And we were talking about the Blackout Tuesday movement today, and we were kind of worrying that maybe Black Lives Matter is kind of turning into a trend. Do you want to kind of expand on
like
that a bit?
A fad, like, this Blackout Tuesday thing, it really was grinding my gears, because from what I understood, Blackout Tuesday was you meant to post a black square and put hashtag Blackout Tuesday, and for the rest of the day, you were not meant to post anything on social media to do with yourself. You were meant to just, you're not even go on social media, you're meant to educate yourself on Black Lives Matter, the movement, the history, all different types of things that relate back to current events. It was meant to be a day of reflection and looking at what is happening at the moment. But yet it was turned into something where it was black tile, black tile, black tile. I didn't think black people should be killed in the streets, black tile, you know? And by doing this, my Instagram was clogged up with black tiles. I didn't know where to donate. I didn't know what was happening locally. I couldn't find about the protest. I couldn't find important bits of literature that I wanted to read and to learn more about. You know, I just think it's very counterproductive just putting up a black tile and being like, I don't like racist people. I don't like people getting killed in the streets, you know? I think there's much more that you can do. So, like, I spent my day yesterday posting literature that I have read and that I thought was amazing and that I think is really beneficial to learn about. And I shared my thoughts and feelings on certain issues because I would rather speak about something than just put a black square. And I had a lot of people swipe up to my Instagram story and say, this is useful. Like, I find your Instagram story is interesting when you talk about things like this. But I would rather have that response than put up a black tile and get, like, I don't know, 30 likes of people agreeing with me that black people should be in the streets. We all know that. Let's all share how we're learning this and the ways to better our community through donations and through different events. Yeah. I just think, like, it's so easy for these things to just be turned into a trend and for us to get swooshed on with the hashtags, you know? People don't die to become a hashtag. They're dying, and let's make it change. Let's not make it a hashtag, because there's so much more we can do.
Well, I was kind of having this discussion with my cousin on Tuesday, and I was really confused as to how the black squares and the black tiles would be helpful, because you're not, like, showing anything. You're not sharing what you're doing. You're not sharing helpful information. You're just silent, and it's like active silence, like, I'm definitely not gonna say anything about this. That's what I got from it. But then I was having this talk with my cousin, and she was kind of saying that not everything that people do, they post on social media. Like, they could be signing petitions, they could be reading books and stuff. And for people who maybe can't afford books or can't go to protests and stuff, this is how they show solidarity. This is how they spread awareness. But then as well, like, it's, you're still not doing anything helpful in my eyes. Like, I would rather that people maybe share articles that they found, or books that, like, books that they love, or films that have taught them about white privilege or the experience of black people throughout history. It is a bit of a funny one. Like, how many people are going to be this enthusiastic over it once all of the protests have died down in a couple of months?
And, like, I'd rather see the same little Instagram posting, like, this is what white privilege, this is what you could, white person can do to help, than see a black tile. I just think it's much more productive to do, and obviously it's amazing to see people show solidarity in during this time, and for us to all come together as a community to do this Blackout Tuesday. I just think that it was, I think it started off as something based in, like, an industry. So in terms of, I don't know if what company was started it or what company actually participated, but I know Rihanna said that Fenty Beauty is not having any sales yesterday. They did not sell a thing. They shut down the online website. So did her clothing line. That was the whole point. It was meant to have a pause and a reflection in terms of selling things and being like an open like market type thing. So I just think it'd be more powerful to for you to shut down your website and not sell something in solidarity, or if you do sell something, for the day or the proceeds go to George Floyd's family, yeah, or go to the Black Lives Matter movement, than just to post the black square, because it was meant to be a day of reflection and a way to help us all as a community. So I just think it could have been a bit more useful, but it's good to see everyone coming together, and it's good to see that people are on the same wavelength now, because I know when I was rambling about this when I was like 14, people were not listening to me. So it's nice to see that there is a big change in attitude.
Yeah, I mean, I do really appreciate the support that everyone's giving for the Black Lives Matter movement. And I'm not really one to tell, I don't like to tell people how they should and shouldn't protest and they should and shouldn't react. But just my personal opinion, I think if you're going to post a black square, post something useful as well. Start conversations with your friends. Which kind of brings us on to our final segment, if you will. What can we do? Drumroll. What can we do to help the Black Lives Matter movement? So Afra, what are some of the ways that people can do their spread awareness and do their thing?
Donate. You can donate to the bailouts, because there's a lot of protesters being arrested for being detained during the protest. And the thing is, it's not always their fault. It can mean they got caught up in the crowd, or they could have just literally been wrong place, wrong time. So you can fund, fund them for the bailouts. You can pay for lawyer fees, you know, because people obviously don't necessarily have a lot of money to pay for lawyers in this situation. So if you can donate money for the lawyer fees, that's absolutely amazing. And just money towards the Black Lives Matter movement. There are so many different grassroots campaigns that are working on funding the funerals, funding education, community-based projects for us to avoid being in this situation in the first place. So to help people in a lower socioeconomic situation, for them not to be trapped in the cycle of poverty. That's one. Donate to help supporters. So obviously that would be organizing rallies and getting together like posters and paying for bailouts and things. And then the last one is education, which is obviously, you know, helping people through the community and supporting us during this time. So there are lots of ways you can donate, and you can also come up with things yourself. You can sing a song and raise money for it. You can, you know, put together protests. It's what me and my friend Leomi are doing. She yesterday started off the idea to have a peaceful protest at the prom in Gravesend on Friday the 12th of June, and we're all going to go down there and have a procession, and me, her and a few other friends are working together. You know, someone has set up a website, we've got links going there, little QR scanners. We're getting in touch with any person that we know would help, because it's during this time we need to come together, and the little things do matter. If you attend a protest, you know, you are showing your public support, your public outrage. And also, most importantly, Jeevan, something that we love to do, we do it so often and with such grace, write to your MP.
Oh my God, cannot stress this enough. Bother them, like send so many emails, get them fed up.
That is what I was saying yesterday on my Instagram story, like, black tiles, yeah, they're nice, but write to your MP. You literally vote them into power, whether you voted for one party or the next. They are meant to represent you in our body of government, in parliament, in PM's questions. If you give them something to talk about, they can go up there and they can ask the prime minister, what do you think about this? Will you support this? Will you put money to change this? Like, that is literally their jobs. Paid them. Send them 1,000 emails. They actually have to listen to you, because you literally pay their way and you vote them into power. So use your power to do this. Call them, do whatever. Because imagine if us as a UK government came out and said, do you know what? What's happened in America is absolutely disgusting. We as the UK are going to work on reforming our police department. We're going to employ more people of ethnic backgrounds, and we're going to help out the communities and stop people from being put in this situation in the first place. That would be so powerful and amazing. But that can only be done if we all get on everyone's cases. So please find out who your local MP is and harass them. Not harass them. But send them emails, call them. That is their job, to listen to you. So if you can talk to them about a parking ticket or about, I don't know, planning permission, you can talk to them about black people being killed in streets.
Also, other things that you can do to help out, spread awareness, sign petitions. There are currently petitions to raise the degree of murder from third degree to first degree, to introduce reform into the police system and stuff. There's so many things. Just like, if you go on Twitter, there's a lot, but you can search them on change.org.
is brilliant. I think, like, during this time, there are so many, like, threads and different things you can do to help. And it literally, you just type in a keyword and it will come up with all the information and in yeah. like, popularity order, when it was come out, you know. So I think Twitter is a really, you don't even have to have an account to look for these things. So just search for it. And there are so many different articles going around at the moment. But like Jamie said, signing petitions, putting your name to something that is, it's like you're standing in a crowd, you know, you're standing in a virtual crowd. You are saying, I stand behind this. So let's all do it.
Yeah. Another thing you can do is spread awareness with your family and friends. Like, call out racism when you see it. I don't care if it's your dad saying it, if it's your grandma saying it, if it's your best friend, call it out, because it's, there's a book that I got for my mum for Mother's Day called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. Can't quite remember who wrote it right now, but you can also read bits of fiction like I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. There's so many. You can go on Afra's Instagram stories because she's got a whole bunch. She reads more than me. Oh, you're putting me to shame.
This is a slow collection. These are things that you can read and learn more about. Yeah. Just Google civil rights books.
I'd also recommend like the A-level civil rights textbook. That's actually fab. That taught me so much.
Here's one I bought earlier.
Yes. I've got that in my room somewhere.
I got it out because I was like, when did all these riots happen? Let me have a look.
But yeah.
It is really useful. Like, if you want to learn more, like, a school textbook is brilliant. You know, they are dear, but this is going from blooming slavery to Barack Obama.
It is so, quite thorough. It's great.
Very interesting.
I think one of the most important things that you can do is just to start these conversations. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it makes you uncomfortable. It should make you uncomfortable. This is a pressing issue, and I feel that we can never really make significant strides in it unless we all accept responsibility. Like, I myself, as a white passing person, benefit from white privilege, and I acknowledge that, and I actively try to fight against that. So just like as Afra mentioned, there's also a protest happening in Gravesend. So just going to give you like a little bit more detail about that. So we're having a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest Friday the 12th of June at the Gravesend Promenade, 1 p.m. till 3 p.m. And we are fighting racism and a pandemic. So please, social distance, face mask. Hand sanitizer. I don't care if you have to beat people away with your signs, stay 2 meters apart, and share with as many people as possible. You can go on to Laomi's Instagram at laomi.c for more information, or gravesendprotest.godaddysites.com for more information. So please come and share your support and bring family and friends and let other people know about the protest.
Please do.
Right, I think that's our show.
I think thanks that's it. Thank you very much.
Hope to see you on the next one. And thank you, as always. Thank you, as always, so much for listening.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.